Hello, 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 everybody. Welcome to another in our series on sales tech consolidation and the sales tech marketplace that Nicholas has behind him, which is a crazy graphic. If you're not on the video, you have to download this thing. It's amazing. And today we're joined by a legend in our space. If you don't know John Miller, you must be living under a rock in our world. We're so honored to have you on the show, John, and I'm really excited to talk about what you're doing now. Nicholas, kick us off.
Yeah, so it's a bit different from the previous episodes because we have been so far bringing vendors to share their perspective. And we are able, I think it's a lifetime opportunity to catch John, indeed a legend, and I'll go over some of the things he's accomplished in between gigs. So we have an industry expert carrying no vendor agenda yet, who can share and who has been taking a step back and looking at the market. So I think it's going to be really fantastic. So like you said, you're pretty very known in the industry. You founded Marketo, and with Marketo, you pretty much wrote the content playbook for both demand generation and demand creation, because you guys were very much, you were in particular a thought leader. So it was not just capturing demand, like we say these days, it was creating demand.
Yeah.
Then you move to Engageo, and you move a little bit on the dark side of sales, a pioneer in enabling account-based motions, and we'll discuss it. Then you merge it with demand-based, where you've been until very recently the CMO, and now you're looking at what's next. So what a great time to catch you.
Yeah, thank you.
So with all your perspective, I think we want to start in looking at the B2B revenue playbook. And in particular, I think we kind of assume what's working, but lately we've been focused a lot on what's broken, what we need to do differently. And maybe you want to start in getting a little bit your perspective on where we stand from a revenue playbook standpoint.
Yeah. So just again, thank you for having me here. And I really appreciate you having someone who, has a little bit more of a marketing mindset, but supporting the sales function as opposed to kind of, directly the sales function. I think it does start by sort of just kind of reiterating like what was this playbook that, I didn't necessarily write, but I helped to pioneer, back in the days of Marketo. And I think it did start with, as you mentioned, using content and thought leadership to build awareness and to capture prospects, get that opt-in permission that you would then nurture until they were ready. And then you would pass them when they hit a certain threshold to an SDR who would, follow up. And then if they qualified it, hand it to sales. And everything was very highly measurable. And if you wanted to scale revenue, you hired more SDRs and you ran more demand gen programs. And that's the playbook that I think largely, most companies are even using today. I mean, obviously there's product-led growth and partner-led growth, but the core sales-led playbook hasn't changed much. And the problem is when I go talk to marketing leaders, sales leaders, SDR leaders, I'm hearing a pretty consistent story, which is that it kind of feels rough out there. Companies are struggling with NRR, net revenue retention. Growth is, not kind of where they're hoping to see. I've talked to so many marketers and CMOs who, basically were told, all right, well, you need to generate 20% more pipeline next year, but we're going to keep your budget the same. And then they're laughing to themselves. They're like, we didn't even make our pipeline goals last year, and on top of that, you're seeing SDR productivity going down, and it's just kind of misalignment across the board. So, Yeah, I think that old play, you know, the old playbook is it's time to retire. You know, we need some new ideas to reflect kind of today's buyers' journeys and today's buyers.
Mm-hmm. So we've got to unpack all of what you said and get a little more specific.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
So I know you have an opinion on what was called the predictable revenue, and from a sales standpoint, was kind of okay to create all this this hair cover through content. You get inbound leads, and you sales was viewed as a kind of a compliment to go after to prospect. So, what's your assessment of this predictable revenue?
Well, you know, I think it's a good example of kind of what's sort of not working on the traditional playbook. I mean, you know, first off, I mean, Engagio, I started a whole company on the fact that the predictable playbook and the old model was really all about leads. And yet fundamentally, we don't sell leads, we sell accounts. And the whole concept of a marketing qualified lead, I think we're increasingly realizing, is not a good perspective of what's going on. You know, but similarly, if we sort of even break it down, let's break it into inbound versus outbound. You know, on the inbound side, you know, that used to be all about you write an ebook and then people would give you their email to download it, and then you would, you know, have a lead. And you know, buyers have gotten savvy to our tactics. You know, they know if they fill out the form, they're probably going to get unwanted phone calls. So they're doing a lot more research anonymously. They're not filling out the forms. I mean, I made my career writing these definitive guides, you know, 200 page books. And like, honestly, people don't want to read them anymore. I mean, I'm proud of them. I think it's great content. People are much more into bite-sized snackable content. And so that, you know, and as people, inbound buyers have become more anonymous, the whole traditional nurturing and scoring mechanism has just kind of gotten broken. And on the outbound side, you know, the buyers have sort of like, again, gotten pretty savvy about the tactics, you know. And what you see, and I'm sure you've had other guests talk about this, is, you know, SDRs and SDR managers kind of jumping from trick to trick to trick, almost like, you know, 10 years ago, it was the, did you get eaten by an alligator? You know, when people don't respond, and then that got responses and everybody did it, and now everybody ignores it. And then it becomes some other trick, you know, and some other trick. And it's just, it's an arms race. And it's not about, you know, basically people jump on whatever tactic works until it gets saturated and it stops working. You know, so you put these two together, and I think, you and I talked a little bit about the 95-5 rule. So we should probably get into that. You know, I think underlying all these problems, you know, is the fact that what the buyer wants at any point in time may not be aligned with what we want if we're trying to sell to them. But more specifically, if you think about our entire target market, the people who we could sell to, there's some research from the Ehrenberg Bass Institute, for example, that says only about 5% of a company's target market are in market to buy at any given time, you know, and the other 95% are not looking to buy your product or solution potentially for months or even years. And so there's a fundamental disconnect that happens when we are trying to sell to the 95%. Right? Because they don't want to hear it. That's not what is relevant or interesting to them at that point in time. And as much as you personalize your email, and as much as you get the value propositions exactly right, you know, at the end of the day, there's only so much you can do to sort of get somebody to move off of, you know, like, I'm not looking to buy a solution, to I'm looking to buy a solution. And so... Yeah. So those are, I mean, this sort of disconnect is, I think, you know, between the 5 and the 95 is one of the most fundamental, I think, reasons why the playbook's not working.
John, so, and there's two pieces of research that just came out Bridge Group and Pavilion. One was the number of SDR touches over the last few years has grown from like 5 to 25 or something like that, something crazy. And only 50% of the sales team surveyed met their quota. So they have the same expectations and same number of people, but I mean, 50% is very low. And what I hear in the market, especially from SDR managers or sales marketing managers, is what do we do now? What should we follow? Because what they're hearing is continue the arms race. You know, it's like antibiotic resistance. Up the dose, make more calls, produce more content, go to more events, yeah. more. And it feels like they don't really have the answer of where do we go from here?
I mean, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing, expecting something different. The definition of being really insane is doing more of the same and expecting something different. I do think we need to evolve. I've been writing about the branding a lot on LinkedIn, as part of the answer here. First off, I'll say, before all the salespeople, switch to another podcast, when I'm a marketer, start talking about branding, let me first off say, I'm not talking about your colors or your logo or kind of what fonts you use or any of that kind of stuff. What I'm talking about is your reputation in the marketplace, right? So first off, let's not even talk about brand. Let's just talk about reputation. Right. What do your prospects think and feel about you before you talk to them? And this is all based on what does your company stand for? How is your core product market fit? What is your competitive positioning? How do people talk about you when they're talking to their peers? When you think about brands, the classic example are things like BMW, performance, Apple, design, Volvo, safety. I would ask every seller on the call, what is that one or two or three words that your market thinks about you before you show up? And I would argue that that has way more to do with both the quality of your demand gen and the quality of your prospecting and sales efforts than how good your emails are, or what kind of programs you run, or what sales methodology you follow, or any of that kind of stuff. And so I think the traditional playbook that I helped to build, over-rotated us into demand, where we spent too much time on stuff that was measurable and not enough time thinking about how do we get our core fundamentals right, the positioning, the product market fit, the reputation in the marketplace. So part of the new playbook is, I think, recognizing for the 95%, the people aren't in market, we are really trying to do two things. One, help them in a consultative way become aware that there's a problem that could be solved. And then second, build some trust in our company. So that way, when they do decide to go solve that problem, they're thinking positively about us, right? This, from a marketing standpoint, this changes how we should think about our ads. For example, don't put a click here on your ad, right? This is about connecting to the emotion and the reptilian brain, not the logical brain. But it's not just marketing, right? This is your whole go-to-market. It's if you're an SDR and you're prospecting into somebody in the 95, don't ask for a meeting. Don't ask if they want to see a demo. Think about how can you, develop that relationship? How can you educate, nurture, perhaps even entertain? How do you connect on the emotional level, not the logical level? And then the last thing I'll say as part of this kind of new playbook, we haven't answered an obvious question. How can you tell if somebody's in the 95 versus the 5? Right. And there are a lot of vendors out there, including my old company, that are selling solutions, you know, for this. And they're all useful. Like intent data has become really hot because people want to know if they're in, if a company might be in market. But here's the thing: intent data is just a signal. It's like a clue. It's like one ingredient in a recipe. I think what happens all too often is people get intent data, give it to the salespeople and say, hey, these accounts are in market. Go after them. There's money in them, Dar Hills, right? And now let's just say on average if you picked randomly, 5% of the people would be in market. And let's say with intent data, you can make that twice as good. You've doubled your hit rate, right? That's an amazing lift to get to, you know, double your accuracy. But it still means that only 10% are in market, which means you're going to still be wrong 9 times out of 10. And every salesperson I know, if you say, here's a hot list, and they call 9 of them and they get no's, they're going to say that list sucks, right? Not that that was twice as good as calling randomly, right? So that's the first thing about the sort of signal-based prospecting is you have to remember it's giving you a lift. It's not pinpointing, you know, exact accuracy. And then the other thing about intent is, as I said, it's just one ingredient. You got to look at other factors. In my experience, one of the most predictive factors is when you start seeing multiple people from the same company engaging with you. So it's not just one person on your website downloading 10 eBooks. It's 10 people on your website, none of them downloading an eBook, but they're all kind of prospecting around anonymously. When you can combine that kind of engagement data with intent data, with other things like technographic data, you know, what did they buy? How long ago did they buy it? Suggest what they might buy next. Other factors like, if they're a customer, are they using your product? What jobs are they posting, et cetera? Combine that all together. Now you start to have a full recipe that can at least guide you to the 95 versus the 5. You know, and then once you know that, it's all about the right message at the right time for each account.
Yeah, awesome. So I know you're big on ABX. And when we discussed preparing this, you were prompt to correct me that the X is not the variable for marketing or sales. It's about the experience. I know also you're pretty big on making sure we don't lump in ABX accounts, because accounts is not really how companies operate. It's more buying committee, buying group, whatever. So as you take a step back on account base and how we should approach companies, what model? Because it's hard for practitioners. How we should look at it?
Yeah. So first off, yeah, ABX stands for the experience, just like CX is customer experience. And again, I think that's so critical. It's what I just said. Like, we screw ourselves up if we don't align our go-to-market to where that buyer is in their journey. And the right account experience is one that is aligned to where they are in their account journey. So I would argue if all you're doing is separating how your strategy to the 95 versus the 5, you're starting to practice ABX. Right. Now, the reality is, I think too many people have talked about ABM, ABX, ABSD, you name it, as a binary either or thing, right? Like, either you do account-based marketing or you do traditional demand gen. And the reality is it's much more of a spectrum, you know, where you can have a range of different levels of go-to-market. You know, if you're Kyndryl, which, you know, used to be IBM Web Services, and you have a $500 million a year contract with American Airlines, of course you're going to treat that account as a market of one and give them completely bespoke marketing, because it's a $500 million a year. You know, if you sell things that are, you know, $1 million a year, right, you're going to treat that differently than Kyndryl treats American Airlines. If you sell things that are $100,000 a year, you're going to go to market against that ICP differently. And if you sell things that are $20,000 a year, it's going to be different. So fundamentally, you know, it's, to me, I think this is really about use the right go-to-market for the deal sizes that you sell. And the reality is you're probably going to span a couple, you know, just, you know, between kind of one to many, one to few, one to one kind of approach. So Yeah, I think that's where we are with kind of a, you know, account-based maturity is it's kind of all over the map, you know, but people shouldn't think of it as a all-in or all-out thing. It's really a spectrum of styles.
John, you know, you started with the ideal account profile and the people that you're talking to at the account, which is a lot of companies go through that really, really fast. They get sort of a generic Mary marketer and Bob the sales VP, you know, and they don't really go deep on that. I think it's hard work and it's kind of boring to do a lot of research. And so people just kind of skip over that and they move to, okay, let's go out and start messaging them without having a really deep understanding. But the other thing is, in what you're describing, the old predictable revenue model has conversion rates, and people are still today, they're obsessed with the funnel conversion rates and how are we doing, how are we benchmarking against those? And so, you know, they first they skip over the really hard work at the beginning of nailing your ICP and persona, and then they're still focused on how are we converting those down through the funnel to pipeline. And so, you know, what should they do?
Well, I guess I'm going to come back to kind of what I was saying about it being a spectrum. You know, you got to remember, whenever you talk about conversion rate, right, what you're really talking about is a failure rate. And, you know, if you have a 5% conversion rate, right, that means you failed to connect with 95% of the people you're going after. You know, and, you know, maybe that's okay if you've got a million targets, right? Again, as I said, if you sell something that's 20K a year, but there's a million possible companies who can buy it, maybe the right answer is to accept a 5% conversion, right? Because there's just, no matter what, there's always going to be more fish in the sea, you know? But if you're Boeing and there are only 100 airlines in the world you can sell to, you better make sure you're not screwing any of those up. Right. And all it takes is one person at one company to hit spam on your email and you can't ever reach them again. You know, and you're not only that, you're making it harder for anybody else from your company to reach that person. You know, and so, yeah, I think, you know, the larger your deal size, the more you need to make sure you're getting it right, which is what ABM is all about. It's about differentiating, or ABX is all about. It's about differentiating the amount of resource and personalization and relevance you put into each account based on its potential value, you know, and that should, if you do it right, have a direct impact on conversion rates.
So I'd like to go back to something you mentioned, and I know you're pretty passionate about, is we collectively are over-indexing on what can be measurable. So that's basically casted the fate of branding effort in the past couple of years. So give us a little bit your stance on this issue. Not everything can be measured. And there is this this elephant in the room. Many leadership team, many boards are very obsessed about attribution and making sure that whatever we do can be measured, track. So what's your assessment on that area of the issue? And maybe not assessment, but what type of recommendation? Because it's hard to break from this situation. If a board member says, well, I want to see the results of whatever you do, it's very hard to groom something that you cannot tie directly to a measurable result that can be unambiguously attributed back to what you've done.
Totally, totally. Let me just first off say, yes, I agree that the way most marketers and go to GTM teams are been told to be measured is hard to change, you know, because the story of make everything measurable, you tie this much to budget to this many leads to this many opportunities to this much revenue, it's a great story. I think the challenge for today's go-to-market leaders is to start educating their peers and their boards that it's a false story, right? And yeah, you can talk about it and you can measure it, but it's misleading and will ultimately, therefore, guide you down the wrong path. As an example, you know, almost every company I know today is still trying to attribute pipeline to either marketing sourced or sales sourced. You know, and marketers get paid sometimes on the percent of pipeline that's quote unquote sourced or quote unquote influenced by marketing. But again, what does that mean? If you go back to like what I was talking about, reputation affects everything. So by that argument, marketing influences everything, right? But more importantly, you know, I can't think of almost any deal that I've looked at in the last, you know, couple of years that ultimately didn't come about that had both marketing and sales interactions along the way. You know, and sure, maybe the last touch was an SDR prospecting. Maybe they're prospecting because they got some intent data from marketing. You know, but maybe that person happened to have come by a trade show 6 months ago or was at a trade show and their friend said something about the company, you know, or maybe there was some Gartner report that they looked at some point. You know, the point is you just don't know. All like buying is so complex, trying to actually like smash it down to like, well, that deal happened because of that interaction, right? It's always going to give you the wrong answer. Right. And intuitive, we know that. We know that's not the right answer, you know. And so, you know, I think on the measurement, just like I strongly, you know, recommend that companies don't try to measure marketing versus sales pipeline, that instead they measure just team-based pipeline. How much do we need to achieve our goals? Did we as a team achieve that? Otherwise, you hurt the results. Now, I will say, that doesn't mean that you abscond responsibility for individual performance. I love using sports analogies when I start talking about sales and marketing, you know, and I think, you know, we should be talking more about a football team rather than a relay race. So to the measurement side of things, yeah, you have one scoreboard. How many touchdowns did we as a team score? You know, that doesn't mean you don't record game film and coach your individual players, right, to improve performance. But ultimately, that measurement is about improvement and not proving, you know, impact. So, you know, that's one set of thoughts about measurement. I think, you know, we talked about brand. This is probably one of the hardest things. You know, because as much as I've said, you know, your brand is your reputation and how people think and feel about you. The point is there are things marketers can invest money on that can try to move that needle, whether that's a billboard or a display ad or your Gartner investment, right? These things, you know, or involvement in communities. I mean, there's so many things that can do this. And I guess the point I'm saying is it's not about the money, but money can help. And yet that measurement is much harder to do. You know,
and I think it ties also to how sales and marketing are working together.
Yeah.
Which frankly, we've been in that game. It has been for several decades kind of a positive tension and probably will continue to be. Maybe you can comment on some of the best practices or recommendation you would make on as we bring together two organizations to contribute to one pipeline. What are the things that are works best or things that can help move the ship the boats?
Sure. Well, I mean, first off, I should say, as much as I use the sports analogies, I'm not like a true sports fan myself. So I might get some details wrong, but you know, let's go back to football. And I'm talking about American football in particular here. I think there are some kind of interesting insights that can kind of lead for best practices. So, you know, first off, you have one team. Now you do have the, you know, offense players and the defense players, right? So you have people in different positions, you know, who have different roles and responsibilities on the team, but it's still a single team with a single win and you win and lose together. So that's the first just best practice. Like recognize, like I'm not trying to say smash this into one department and everybody's homogenous, you know, because you do need different skills and different kind of perspectives and all that kind of thing. you know, even if you think about sort of the offensive team, you know, I always like to say, all right, well, Sales is the quarterback. They should be calling the plays. They're ultimately responsible, you know, and you also have your wide receivers and your running backs. That's probably Sales, right? But then marketing can be thought of as like, that's the offensive line, you know, who's ultimately trying to create the opportunities for the running backs and the wide receivers to kind of get through. So, you know, if you sort of lean into kind of this, you know, the sports analogy, two things I find that are kind of interesting. You know, the first is in terms of measurement. You know, a lot of people don't like funnels anymore. They say the funnel's dead. You know, how can you put a linear measurement process on a nonlinear buying journey? But I like to say, well, you know, the path the football takes towards the end zone is also nonlinear, but you still have yard lines on the field. And the yard lines on the field tell you something, right? They tell you how likely are you to score. They tell you what plays you should be running. So I think there's a good analogy back to, you know, the sales and marketing that, you know, where that account is in its journey is the yard lines. And it may not be linear, but knowing where they are tells us a lot about how close they are and what plays we should run. And then the second analogy I'll torture out of football here, you know, is you have a team, you know, you have a playbook of things that you could run, but what do you do before you run the play? You have a huddle. And I think that's one of the most impactful things that companies can do to drive sales and marketing alignment. And frankly, they don't do it nearly enough. You know, we called these things back at demand-based stand-ups. And every 2 weeks, we'd have, you know, there'd be a 15-minute meeting between the sales rep, a demand gen marketer, and an SDR. That's it. There's no management. It's not a forecast call. You know, this is a call to say, where are our accounts on the field? And what plays are we going to run to achieve our team-based goals, you know, against those accounts? Just like you would have a huddle in football. And that is so powerful for driving alignment, just to have a meeting like that.
Insightful. And we could spend another hour on a topic near and dear to my heart.
Now, Nicholas doesn't understand football analogies.
No, I always
say this. Soccer.
Do I have to explain? I'm talking about
no. And I'm just curious, just very quickly on the attribution side, from a practical perspective, if a marketer has budget and they're looking at what they spent last year, and they come to you and go, okay, we spent, you know, $25,000 on a booth at a conference. Is that still being attributed back to pipeline, the spend that you put on events or digital spend and things like that? And if not, how do you know if you should reinvest?
You should do it.
Okay.
Yeah. So first I'll go back, you know, that all this should be ultimately about improving, not proving, you know, ROI. So what does that mean? First off, one of the things I always like to look at, even before I try to do pipeline attribution, is just how much do I need to invest to get qualified engagement? You know, i.e., you know, at that trade show, I don't care how many booth scans I had, right? How much time did the right people from the right company spend with me, right? And how much did that cost? You know, and in some ways, I'd say that's the most impactful thing, right? What is the most cost-effective way to get the right kind of engagement from the right kinds of people? You know, so that's one set of metrics I think that can be meaningful that don't get you into any kind of attribution kind of discussion. Now, you can still do attribution, right? You can sort of say, okay, take that deal, and we, you know, there were 7 different programs and touched them along the way. And so I'm going to somehow make some assumptions about which people to include in that process and which programs. And I'm going to, you know, allocate it all up linearly or nonlinear or whatever. And the key between everything I just said is you're layering some assumptions upon assumptions. I'm going to assume it's these people, not those people. It's these touches, not that touch. I'm going to ignore all the touches I can't measure, like word of mouth and blah, blah, blah. You know, oh, and I'm going to assume it's linear attribution, you know, or something like that. Okay, what happens when we assume? You've probably heard this. You make an ass out of you and me. So as long as you recognize that all these assumptions layered on top of each other mean that you're getting something that's maybe directionally right, but not an ROI down to the nth degree. Use it accordingly. You know, if something has like 10x the value than something else does with attribution, I'm not going to say it's 10 times better necessarily, but it's a pretty good bet. It makes more sense to do that than the other thing, you know, and just use it as a guide, you know, and at the end of the day, combine that with your intuition and your judgment and your experience, because that's why we're hiring these marketers, you know. And lastly, remember what I said earlier, what really matters is your reputation and your product market fit. And frankly, if that stuff is good, any competent team can put together a mix of trade shows and webinars and demand gen programs, and you're going to do well. And if your reputation and product market fit are wrong, you could have the best marketing team in the world, and you can get every trade show exactly right, and you're still not going to deliver results. So stop spending so much time like trying to measure ROI of each program down to the nth degree, right? And instead, focus your time on what really matters, right? Which is, how do we move the needle on our reputation and our product market fit and our positioning and all that kind of stuff. So I don't know, I got a little onto my soapbox there at the end, but hopefully it makes sense.
It does. It does. Without a terrific product, you know, it all comes down to to that, and people talking about it and the reputation that you grow over the course of the year. So it's super important. Nicholas?
So, yeah, it's hard to have a meeting these days without touching AI. So maybe one last leg of this conversation. I think everybody's using AI one way or another. But when you take a step back in your situation, where you see are the best bets to get AI to have a strategic role in the next 12 to 18 months, with teams struggling, and where potentially are the best bets?
Yeah. I mean, where everybody's so focused today on AI to generate content, you know, write my blog post, draft my email. You know, that's fine. Personally, I can tell when something's been written by AI. Like, I'm getting pretty tired of, you know, that very homogenized kind of, you know, tone of voice. And even there's some really neat tools out there that kind of can scale your prospecting. You know, and yet most of the time when I've seen those, it still feels pretty generic. Like, you know, you give them their LinkedIn profile and it says, okay, as a VP of security at a SaaS company, you probably experienced this pain. And sure, that's more personalized than not. And it saved the SDR some time, right? But the reality is, what we don't need is more email, right? What we need is better email. What we need is better, more authentic, more actually relevant, you know, interactions. So where I'm excited to see AI take things is, you know, more in the direction of, hey, for this person in this account, you know, we've got David here and we haven't spoken to him in a while. What's the right set of things that we should do? The right offers, the right messages over what channels that are going to help this account, you know, potentially move forward, right? And if they're in the 95 unaware stage, you know, help them know who we are and think positively about us. If they're in market, help them to actually engage with us, you know, and so on. But I think that's a really, you know, interesting area for where AI is going to, you know, evolve into. You know, now, two other thoughts. You know, that said, we're absolutely going to see more SDR automation come, right? Because the reality is the AI writing will get better, right? And we saw that from GPT-3.5 to GPT-4. I just switched to using Claude 3 Opus, which to me is way better than GPT-4. And then GPT-5 is going to come out and that's going to be better. So the reality is, it's coming. We're not there quite yet for, you know, autonomous prospecting, but it is coming. And I think, you know, a great analogy is going to be like when the spinning Jenny got introduced, you know, into cloth weaving, you know, way back when. know, and what happened is you moved from having 8 weavers, each working their own thing, to one, you know, more technical person overseeing 8 machines. You know, and I think that's likely to happen. And that's likely to then probably blur some of the lines between marketing, sales, operations. You know, I don't know what we'll call that function. Is that just growth or is that something else? But, you know, that is coming, I guess, is sort of the point. And then the last thing I'd say is, and I've been thinking about a lot of this from the marketing tool side of things. You know, the reality is tools like Marketo and the other market automation tools, they've just gotten too hard to use. And they've gotten too hard to use, not because it's too hard to know which button to press. It's too hard to use because the amount of knowledge you need to know about how to set things up properly and how to structure your campaigns the right way so that your dashboards don't break and you're using the right fields and the right exclusions and the right this. There's just a lot of knowledge you need to know, and it's hard to scale that out. But again, that's where AI can be amazing. You know, I think in the future, we're going to see whole new interfaces, you know, where people are just chatting with these tools and then the tools are making the campaigns for them, you know, as opposed to, you know, super technical people dragging and dropping and, you know, doing all that kind of stuff. So long story short, I think we're in the near term, you know, we're maybe a little bit of a trough of disillusionment where we're like, yeah, AI is cool, but it's not quite there yet. And, you know, and yet at the same time, there's some really profound, amazing stuff coming.
Awesome. Well, I'm afraid we reached the end for this episode. So it's been really fantastic.
Yeah, thank you.
I was drinking through the fire hose of your observation across the entire market. So thanks.
We didn't get to ask what John is building now, but can we do that on another podcast?
Well, I'd be happy to talk about it. I'm still very early in the exploratory phase, okay. You know, but, you know, I mean, I'm happy to share. I mean, as we were just talking about, I've been thinking a lot about how is AI going to change B2B go to market? Mm-hmm. So, you know, stay tuned for more of that.
That's the teaser. It's interesting.
I made a note that we need to bring you back.
Yeah, it's like an ascending, you know, pyramid that we've seen over the last few years of good, clean data, and then the CRM layer, the MAP layer, the API layer, and now we're getting to the top of the AI layer, which is clarity, ease of use. Not having to be an expert in revenue operations in order to use these and get the value. So I'm excited to see what comes next.
Awesome. Thank you. Well, thank you for having me. I enjoyed your questions. It was a good conversation.
Cool. Yeah. This notion of tailoring how you use AI to the various stages of the journey. It becomes so clear to me that's the way we do things, and somewhat we apply to the AI a little bit out of context. The other missing piece, I think, is we've been so much product out, and we lived through a kind of a bubble where there was so much money, everybody was moving to digital, so everybody thought, okay, I need technology to execute digital, and we lost track of the use cases. And I'm finding that there's so many sales organizations that are pushing the product despite what they say. And they don't really understand the actual use cases. And as we are in a very pragmatic economy, the importance of use cases. So if one can bring the two, really understanding the journey and not try to push with blinders, one size fits all for this linear, but tailor and adjust to different stages. When it's brand building, it's brand building. When we start to get in something a little more specific, the use case is paramount. I find those are two big, huge blind spots.
Agreed. Yeah.
Cool. Sorry.
That's why I like
I'm
the word
supposed to be.
that's why I like the word experience, right? It's about aligning your go-to-market to the account's journey and giving them the right experience for that.
Yeah. And back to what you were saying about attribution, the problem is the focus is on attribution. When if you kind of take a step back, an attribution is really, we got sophisticated with all kinds of models, but it's the wrong question. It's legitimate, but it's the wrong question for driving. And I really love your point in saying many of the decisions that we're trying to do is about what we want to double down. I forgot the words you used, but it's really turning the dials. And if you look at it, I think you can leverage, even if they're not perfect, tons of measurements.
Absolutely agree.
Cool. Amen. I could could continue like that. So I couldn't say it because it's not the purpose of this. But yeah, that was inspiring.